The Eric Metaxas Show with your host, Eric Metaxas.
Happy Monday, everyone. Yes, it's Monday. That means today is 22 days till the launch of my book, Is Atheism Dead? It's like an advent calendar. 22 days. Be sure to go to ericmetaxas.com. Be sure to sign up for the launch team. Be sure to pre-order the book at the extremely low prices you will find only there. Don't tell your friends. It's a secret. ericmetaxas.com. 22 days from today is the launch. Got to do it. Thank you. We have a guest on in a few minutes talking about Orthodox Christianity. She's Greek, and I'm going to have some fun with her, okay? But right now, we have our friend Tyson Langhofer, who is the senior counsel at ADF, our friends at the Alliance Defending Freedom. You guys always have exciting stuff. Tyson, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Eric.
I don't know what we would do. Now, you know I'm speaking the truth. If it weren't for you guys at the Alliance Defending Freedom, I actually shudder sometimes when I think of your existence because I think, what if you didn't exist? Religious liberty is under attack like never before. It sounds like a cliche. It is absolutely true. You guys at the Alliance Defending Freedom are, I mean, you are the firewall. You take these cases on that nobody else will take on. What should we talk about the one in Loudoun County in Virginia?
Yeah, I think that one kind of encapsulates the fight that's going on right now, Eric. So I think that is the one that be interesting for your audience to hear about.
Well, let's tell the story for people who aren't familiar with it. But I just want to say again, folks, Alliance Defending Freedom, it says it right there, right? They're defending freedom, particularly religious freedom. It is really important. They're fighting for us. Actually, if you go to our website, metaxastalk.com, there's a banner. I hope you'll donate to them because they need our help. And they're fighting for all of us. If you get in a situation like this, they're the ones you're going to call. So what is happening right now? There's a teacher who's been suspended in Virginia, in the Richmond area.
Yeah, so, Tanner Cross has been a employee, elementary school PE teacher in Loudoun County for more than 8 years. And back in May, he went to a public school board meeting because Loudoun County was considering adopting a transgender policy, which would force all teachers to refer to any student according to any pronoun that student demands. And Tanner was concerned about this. He thinks that speaking untruths to students is harmful. And he spoke out at this meeting. Less than 2 days later, the school suspended him simply for speaking his views on this proposed policy. We filed a lawsuit. Loudoun County judge granted an injunction reinstating Tanner. And then that went to the Virginia Supreme Court, and they affirmed the reinstatement. So Tanner went back to school. Unfortunately, Loudoun County didn't heed the warnings that many teachers and parents and community members were giving to the board about this policy, and they enacted the policy in August. And so several weeks ago, we added two new teachers, Monica Gill and Kimberly Wright, to the lawsuit to challenge the policy, because right now, Loudoun County has a policy which will allow any student at any age, kindergarten on up to high school, to demand that they be referred to as any pronoun that they want without parental permission, without any sort of diagnosis from a medical professional.
Tyson, I have to just hit pause for a second. I just want to tell my audience so to make sure they're tracking. Ladies and gentlemen, you understand this is insanity. Like, I want to be really clear. This is insanity. This is like stuff that happened during the French Revolution, stuff that happened during the Soviet Bolshevik Revolution, where people say things that are crazy and they force everyone to go along. I cannot believe this has come to America. I cannot believe children are being subjected. This is kind of cruel, actually, to kids, to give them the option to ask a kid who's never thought of it in his life, hey, what's your pronoun? This is madness. And if we do not fight back, if ADF weren't there, folks, do you understand these are your schools, these are your kids, these are your teachers, your neighbors. I rarely get this exercised about something, but this is madness. You know it's madness. I know it's madness, and we have to speak out against it. So I say that because I just feel like I have to parenthetically underscore what we're all thinking. I mean, here we are. You guys are fighting a legal battle over something that most of us know it is preposterous. So I'm in awe, Tyson, of your ability to do this and ADF's ability to do this. I'm glad you do it. But I almost can't believe that this is happening in America today. It sounds like an end times novel.
It is scary, Eric, because, you know, these teachers, Monica Gill, she's taught history for 20 some years at Loudoun County. She teaches every student. She loves every student. She's able to accommodate every student. And they've accommodated, she's accommodated transgender students in the past. But to force every teacher, every staff member, every student to say that something that they think is untrue is unconstitutional, and it's wrong, and it is promoting something that is going to be harmful to students.
Well, there's no question about it. Look, let me make my pitch. Folks, go to MetaxasTalk.com. You'll see the banner for ADF. It's up today, Monday. And please give what you can, because this is true madness has been unleashed on America. This is a cruel thing to me that's being done to parents, being done to kids, being done to teachers. This madness, where's this coming from? Is this a popular thing? No. This has been pushed by people that, look, I assume they're sincere, but it's no less crazy. I mean, this is when somebody says, I'd like to identify as a cat. I'd like to identify as a Ford Mustang. I mean, at what point do we say this is madness? Nobody seems to have the guts, so we have to take it to court. And if it weren't for ADF, we would all just be lying down and accepting it. So I hope you'll help ADF. Go to our website, MetaxasTalk.com. So where is this right now, Tyson? I'm, again, in awe that we have to fight this battle legally in our courts.
Well, thankfully, the court initially entered the injunction to reinstate Tanner. So Tanner's back in school along with Monica and Kim. But we are asking the court to enter an order stopping Loudoun County from enforcing a policy which would force teachers and students to say things that they think are untrue and that are going to be harmful to students. So we're waiting on a hearing date for the court to hear our injunction request. Hopefully the court agrees with us that, you know, what we teach in schools can be life altering for children, and we owe it to them to teach consistent with science and reality, and that they will protect the rights of teachers and students and parents, because this policy allows the school to transition these students without parental permission, students as young as kindergarten. And as you said, that's scary. And it's wrong, and it's dangerous to our students.
It's madness. And if we don't fight it, folks, shame on us. I mean this. Whatever you need to do, some people can just write a check to ADF. By all means, write a check to ADF, please. But there are other ways that we can fight. We need to get in this battle. This is madness. Statistically, it's kind of like the election. You start looking at things, you say, this doesn't seem right. It seems like, you know, 0.01% of the population has real transgender dysphoria issues. But every kid is being asked, what are your pronouns? What's your gender? And we're getting, you know, multiplied percentages. We're getting 10% of kids kind of wondering what they're... This is being pushed. This is not normal on any level. This is somehow being pushed, I would say, for other reasons. In any event, whatever it is, folks, we've got to fight it. It's not right. If it weren't for ADF, as I say, I don't know where we would be. What other cases do you have coming up? We've just got a few seconds left, but what other stuff is on the horizon for ADF?
Yeah, we've got another teacher who was actually fired 2 years ago in Williamsburg, Virginia, and that case is going to the Virginia Supreme Court right now on this very same issue. So this is not an isolated incident. It is an incident that's sweeping across the country. And what your listeners can do is speak the truth. Do not be cowed. Speak the truth, because people are harmed when children are told lies.
Thank you very much. Folks, go to MetaxasTalk.com, click on the ADF banner. God bless you. Hey, folks, you wish you remembered names better and thought more clearly? Improve your memory with VivaLore Memory Support. VivaLore's founder prayed that God would show her the solution to memory loss when her mother had dementia. Divine encounters, faith, and her background as a pharmacist led Susan Gibson to create VivaLore Memory Support. VivaLore is a premium quality all-natural supplement with 5 to 20 times more nutrients than any other memory supplement. It's won numerous awards and has 3 books independently written about it. Visit VivaLore.com for testimonials about the life-changing improvements people have experienced. VivaLore is for those with normal memory, mild, or severe memory loss. Do not wait till your memory slips. The pathology starts 20 years before your first memory loss symptom. VivaLore is V-I-V-O-L-O-R. Go to VivaLore.com, buy 3 and get 40% off automatically applied. That's 40% off if you order 3. The makers pray that God's healing presence rests on every pill. VivaLore.com, V-I-V-O-L-O-R.com. Check it out. Κοίταξε να δεις, θα μιλάμε όχι αγγλικά, ελληνικά τώρα, okay? If you don't understand Greek, folks, I'm going to do the program in Greek because the Greek is the language of the God. The New Testament is written in the Greek. You should pay attention. I have a guest, a Greek guest, of course. Her name is Evgenia Konstantinou. Can I call you Jeanine?
Jeannie.
No,
that's
we should
right.
We should do it just in Greek. Evgenia Konstantinou. I'm a bit angry because the people don't understand the Greek. They should study the New Testament.
Yes, because Jesus spoke Greek. Don't you know that?
Of
the
course.
New Testament was Greek.
And the that's Panagia, she was Greek.
Now, only a denaliness.
Okay, listen, it's such a joy for me to have you as my guest that I get really goofy. Evgenia Jeannie. Konstantinou, yes. You're in San Diego. You are, of course, Greek, but you're American, just as I am. And you've written a book. I was so excited when I saw this. It's titled Thinking Orthodox, Understanding and Acquiring the Orthodox Christian Mind. So you are an academic. Let's start there.
Yes, I am. I'm a professor, and I've been a professor for many years. Professor of New Testament and Early Christianity.
New Testament, which, as we have said, was written in Greek, obviously, and Early Christianity. I want to get your background, Jeannie, because you're an academic, you're a Christian, you take it all very seriously. There are a lot of people in the world of the academy who are they're professors in New Testament studies and this and that, but you wouldn't describe them as actual Christians. They're just academically focused on this. But you really are serious about your faith, and you're taking it you're a theologian.
Yes, you're right about that. It's very surprising how many scholars of New Testament really don't believe what's even in the New Testament. And I'm shocked at this because I think, where else would you have, and not just in New Testament studies, but also in theology, so many people don't accept basic Christian doctrines that you and I hold dear and are absolutely essential, such as the virgin birth, the resurrection of Christ, and yet they're teaching theology even in so-called religious institutions.
Well, now that's the key. I don't expect any different from secular institutions. Because they think, hey, it's like I'm teaching the Epic of Gilgamesh. You know, we're just looking at the text and we don't believe Gilgamesh was a real dude. But the fact is that in seminaries, in all these kinds of places, they don't believe. I want to talk to you about the Orthodox world, of course, and people who know this program know that I grew up in the Greek Orthodox Church because growing up in the Greek community in the United States, if you don't go to church on Sunday, θα φας ξύλο, you're gonna get it.
That means you're gonna get a spanking.
A spanking, but the way they put it, the Greeks, this is so poetic, right? They don't say you're gonna get a spanking. They say θα φας ξύλο, you're gonna eat wood. In other words, yeah. I'm gonna beat you with a stick. θα φας ξύλο. It's really grotesque. It's medieval. But that's who we are as a people. We believe that children should be beaten to go. No, we don't. We don't believe that. But it's kind of funny because I grew up in the Greek Orthodox Church. And one of the things I want to explore with you is the idea that I think there are tons of people sitting in the pews who really know nothing about the Christian faith or the Bible or the Orthodox mind. They just go because it's a cultural thing. So it's a delight for me to talk to somebody who really appreciates the Christian faith through this tradition. I'm friends with many people, Frederica Matthews Green and others, who just love the Orthodox tradition, and it excites me. But let's start with your biography. Where did you grow up, and how Greek are you?
I grew up in Los Angeles and born in the San Fernando Valley, grew up there until I was 11. Then we came to San Diego County when San Diego was still a relatively small town, and spent the rest of my life in San Diego, with the exception of time that I spent on the East Coast. I ended up getting married to a Greek Orthodox, well, a man who became a priest. You don't marry a priest, but he was ordained a priest. So we served a lot of different parishes. So yes, my faith is very important to me. And I have a very extensive education in theology. And also I went to law school and I was working as a lawyer for a while before I became more involved in theological studies.
Okay, so a couple of interesting things. First of all, we have to tell our non-Orthodox listeners that this is, to me, one of the beauties of the Greek Orthodox Church, the Orthodox Church, is that a priest can be married and have families. And there's something deeply healthy about that. We don't need to go into the other side of that equation, but it's kind of wonderful. So you, as the wife of a Greek Orthodox priest, you were addressed, I'm assuming, as presbytera.
That is correct. That's my title.
And presbytera, of course, presbyter is bishop. And so it's like bishopress or bishop, whatever it is. The point, these are all these terms.
Okay, leader. Presbyter literally means elder, but it was, it's a New Testament term. And later they took that term and called them, now they call them a priest, but the Christians did not use the term priest because priests were people who sacrificed animals. So the leaders of the congregation were the presbyters. The bishops, of course, were also leaders, but they were married too, you know, in the early church. Bishops
and
were also
what's the Greek term for bishop?
Episkopos.
Oh, you know what? I knew that. Of course, yeah. I knew that. Episkopos.
That's right.
My father's saying, the drepese. How could I get that mixed up? So you have Episkopos, where we get the Episcopalian rainbow flag that comes right out of the New Testament, and then the Presbyterians. It's so funny, these terms, presbyter.
Yep.
But you're telling me, though, if the elders were the presbyters, the leaders, it really sounds like the New Testament model of the church, which much of the evangelical church and the Protestant church has adopted, this idea that we're all members of a royal priesthood. So the idea of having a priest, it's kind of, we're all supposed to be all in. We don't just kind of sit in the pews and we have a leader who's the priest and he does the fancy stuff and, you know, we just we work at the coffee shop. We're all Christians.
Well, you're absolutely right. Everybody's supposed to be all in. In the early church, they were. But there were also people who were designated for certain roles in the church. And we know, of course, that the apostles laid hands on people and appointed them as deacons and also as presbyters and eventually the episcopacy also. So initially, the bishops of the church, it seems, even from what we can see in the New Testament, with the writings of Paul, the term episkopos, overseer, literally overseer, bishop, and
episkopos. You know what? I literally never thought of that. I literally never thought of the words skopos, scope, to see, episkopos, overseer. Isn't it nice when you know Greek? I'm telling you, people, you need to learn the Greek. Okay, so that's kind of cool. So keep going.
So episkopos and presbyter, presbyteros, were used interchangeably. But then by the end of the first century, we see the emergence of one bishop overseeing a number of presbyters. But the church always had structure, even though we all, of course, we affirm the royal priesthood. Everyone is sanctified. Everyone acts in a sacramental manner. But that doesn't mean that there weren't defined roles in the church. And what the problem I think that many Protestants have is that very often they're reacting against Catholicism.
Right. Exactly.
And we were never part of Catholicism. We were, the Orthodox Church is the continuation of the ancient apostolic church. We never were involved in any of the developments that happened in the West because of the papacy during the Middle Ages, and also the theological developments that happened in the West. So Protestants are always positioning themselves against anything that seems Catholic, and it might even be something that was done in the early church. But they feel very reluctant to accept these things because it just of Catholicism to them.
Yeah, there's so much here. Well, we're going to get into that. I want to make sure I get your story, though. When you grew up, you know, like me, as a Greek American, was faith important to you, or was it principally a cultural thing? How did that play out for you?
I think that faith was important for us, but it wasn't a very heavy-handed thing. And so I think what you find, and maybe this was your experience, even though you said that you were told if you don't go to church, you'll get a spanking or you'll eat wood. We weren't told that. And that wasn't, I think, the experience of many Greek Orthodox growing up in America. It's just part of who you are.
Right.
And they tend to have a very relaxed attitude, not toward God, because many people think that the Orthodox are not very pious or very religious because they don't talk about Jesus all the time. But the fact is, that's not how they were raised culturally, because in your village, everybody was a Christian. So they say, well, how come the Orthodox aren't evangelizing? Well, it's not been part of course, they have sent out missionaries to other countries and places where people don't know the gospel. But within traditionally Orthodox countries, who are you going to evangelize?
Let's hit pause there. Forgive me. We're going to be right back, folks. Wonderful conversation. I'm talking to the author of Thinking Orthodox.
Hey, folks, I've got to tell you a secret about Relief Factor that the father-son owners, Pete and Seth Talbot, have never made a big deal about, but I think it is a big deal. I really do. They sell the 3-week quick start pack for just $19.95 to anyone struggling from pain like neck, shoulder, back, hip, or knee pain, $19.95, about a dollar a day. But what they haven't broadcasted much is that every time they sell a 3-week quick start, they lose money. In fact, they don't even break even until about 4 to 5 months after if you keep ordering it. Friends, that's huge. People don't keep ordering Relief Factor month after month if it doesn't work. So yes, Pete and Seth are literally on a mission to help as many people as possible deal with their pain. They really do put their money where their mouths are. So if you're in pain from exercise or even just getting older, order the 3-week quick start for $19.95. Let's see if we can get you out of pain too. Go to relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com. I use it. It works.
Hey there, folks. I'm talking to Eugenia Scarvelis Constantino, also known as Jeannie Constantino, the author of an exciting book. It's called Thinking Orthodox, Understanding and Acquiring the Orthodox Christian Mind. So, Jeannie, before we get into the deeper stuff, there's so much here. You were just saying something that I've talked about this endlessly over the years. As I think I shared with you, I was raised in the Greek Orthodox Church, and I sort of drifted away, never consciously. I don't think people drift consciously, but I drifted unconsciously into a kind of agnostic whateverism. I just coined that term, Albin. Write that down, because but it's kind of funny that I think that happens to a lot of people who grow up in the Greek Orthodox Church. It's just kind of a cultural thing, and then you kind of drift off and marry whomever. And part of what's fascinating to me is that when you have what I call any kind of ethnic Christianity, the problem is that you can very easily focus on the ethnic part. So this is where the Greeks hang out. We hang out in the church. And as a result of that, you're not thinking evangelistically. You're not thinking about the fact that most people in this community are outside the Greek church are secular. They're not. So you can sort of lose something. And I think that's part of the tragedy of what I think of as ethnic Orthodox Christianity in America, is you forget that you're sending these kids like me into a deeply secular, devotedly secular world, and that you kind of assume that, you know, everybody in the Chorio is Greek, but of course you're no longer in the Chorio.
That's right. The word Joryon means village, just for your audience. That's right. Well, the fact is, what you're talking about, your experience is like many people, but not just in the Orthodox Church. The same thing could be said and did happen to Lutherans when they
Absolutely.
Were earlier in the century, when there were, you know, German Lutheran parishes versus Swedish Lutheran parishes, or Catholic parishes that were Italian or Polish or something like this. So we're definitely in that transition stage where we're having to really remind people that this is not about being Greek. And you don't have to be Greek or Russian to be an Orthodox Christian. Orthodoxy is all over the world. It is the second largest Christian church behind the Catholic Church, and most people don't know that. So, and it has been brought to this country primarily by immigrants. And some people who set foot in an Orthodox church might be a little bit put off by the fact that there seems to be a cultural element. And that is definitely a challenge for us to overcome. But your situation of going to church, being raised in a church, and then going to college and not really being prepared for that, and sort of trying to find your way, is actually really common, not just among Orthodox right. Christians, people in the Orthodox Church, in the Catholic Church, everywhere. I mean, I'm encountering, because I teach college students most of the time, they're also having to search to decide whether or not the way they were raised is something that they are going to embrace themselves. And everybody has to go through that process of taking their parents' faith, if they were lucky enough to get one from their parents, whatever it is, some kind of a grounding, and decide for themselves whether or not that's really for them.
I think my diagnosis over the decades has been that where the Orthodox Church has failed, in my experience, and I don't just mean in my experience, but in the experience of the vast majority of the people I know who were raised in the Greek Orthodox world, is that because of what you were saying earlier, we didn't get the basics. The basics were assumed. And of course, the culture is dramatically secular, and the schools where we go, wherever it is, even high school, but I'm saying it's just not reinforced. So it seems to be this kind of bubble. You go there, you know, once or maybe twice a week if you're lucky, and it becomes this Greek thing that, you know, if somebody says, I always say, if somebody said to me, you know, when I was in college, do you know when you say Christos Anesti, Jesus rose from the right. dead, do you believe that literally? I would have no idea. The subject was never even addressed. And I thought, I don't know. I have no idea what I believe. I have no idea whether what we claim is rational or, in other words, apologetics, another Greek word, it was simply never addressed. And so I think that when you don't know what you believe and you are released as a sheep among wolves into the secular, into the academy or into the culture, that, you know, it's so easy for you to lose your way.
Well, you're right about that, but it depends very much on the parish. I'm so sorry that you had that reaction or that experience, because you should have been able to say Christos Anesti means Christ is risen. And yes, I absolutely believe that. And I think that for most Orthodox Christians, these are things that they know and that they believe deeply, even sometimes, although they can't articulate them. And they don't have the language, and this is one of the things that the book is about, that Christians, Orthodox Christians, intuitively know things, they experience them, but they find it difficult to articulate it. They don't have the language.
They never experienced the Enlightenment.
Well, we never went through that because we didn't have a Reformation. We didn't have a Pope. We didn't have any of these things that caused the Protestant Reformation. And so we don't, but it's more than just that. It's not just that we didn't have the Enlightenment, because of course we believe the Greeks are very highly educated. The Greeks are high achievers in American society. So it's not anything about that. It has to do with the fact that we do not theologize in the same way that the West theologizes. And this was the main reason why I wrote the book.
Oh, I know. No, I want to get to that. This is what's so fascinating to me. We're going to go to another break here, but there's so much here. And forgive me for my constant interruptions. It's the whole thing is wonderful and fascinating. And the book is Thinking Orthodox. The author, Eugenia Scarvelis Constantinou. We're going to be right back, folks. And don't forget to visit my website, ericmetaxas.com, or for today, ericmetaxas.com, and sign up for the newsletter so you can get this interview and other things sent to you. We'll be right back.
reporting and analysis on the big stories of the day on the Daybreak Insider podcast. It's top-notch reporting from SRN News, along with the sharpest insight from Hugh Hewitt, Mike Gallagher, Dennis Prager, Sebastian Gorka, and the voices of townhall.com. The Daybreak Insider podcast. It's your first look at today's top stories. Available at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, and at SalemPodcastNetwork.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am talking to a fellow Greek American. That's all you need to know. But actually, no, her name is Eugenia Scarvelis Constantinou, Jeannie Constantinou, who's written a really important book, Thinking Orthodox, Understanding and Acquiring the Orthodox Christian Mind. You were about to go, I think, Jeannie, into why you wrote the book. And this this is important, and it crosses denominational lines, what you get into in the book. So I'm excited about this. So, yeah, tell my audience why you wrote the book.
I wrote the book to help other Christians understand each other, basically, because as a minority form of Christianity here in this country, most people don't even know that we exist, let alone understand who we are. So Protestants encounter us and they put us in the camp with the Catholics. And the Orthodox Church is nothing like the Catholic Church. And also, Catholics and Protestants are in many ways more similar to each other than they are to us. We think, we theologize very differently than Catholics and Protestants, Western Christianity, basically, because Western Christianity developed during the Middle Ages in Western Europe. The church was Eastern before it was Western. The church was Greek before it was Latin. And when the church moved into Western Europe and began to develop there, under the umbrella of the papacy, of course, it developed and became something very different than what the early church was like. And for that reason, people assume that we have a certain way of thinking or understanding or believing that is actually not true. It's more characteristic of Western Christianity.
Well, now, it's hard for me to believe. I always try to think about this, how the church developed. And I think to myself, okay, let's say if I went to the church at the time of Polycarp or Irenaeus or whatever, what would it have been like then? I imagine it would have been more like Peter hanging out with the disciples in the early years, but you know, before the fall of Jerusalem, then it would be like a Catholic service or like an Eastern Orthodox service. In other words, at some point, the liturgy of both traditions developed, but I don't have any sense of when that was.
This is a very difficult thing to pin down, and I'm not a specialist in liturgics, but I can tell you that there are many indications in the New Testament that the first Christians were liturgical. St. Paul talks about it in 1 Corinthians. He talks about their meetings. And also in the book of Acts, when it says that they gather together to give thanks, the word is Eucharist. So the gathering together and the very fact that there were presbyters and deacons and episcopi, bishops, shows that there was a kind of hierarchy. There was a structure. There was a regular gathering. And it's more than just getting together to sort of hang out and talk about Jesus. There had to be some structure. We also see this in the earliest written document outside of the New Testament called the Didache, Didachiton Apostolon, the teaching of the 12 apostles, which goes back to the first century, which has specific prayers, practices like fasting, Wednesdays and Fridays.
Let's talk about this because this is really important. The Didache, is that like 95 AD roughly?
As early as 50, and the scholars don't agree, as early as 50 to maybe 100 or 150. So because it talks about prophets and apostles who are traveling and how to distinguish a true apostle from a false apostle. So it had to have been during the lifetime of apostles.
Okay, so very early is the point. It's extremely early. It's not part of the canon, but
that's right.
It's taken deeply seriously in the Orthodox Church. What significance does the Roman Catholic Church accord Didache.
They say in English, didache, vivahi. It's not that it's taken seriously in the Orthodox Church. I'm just pointing out to you that this is another witness, historical document, that bears witness to the fact that Christian gatherings were liturgical. We see that in the book of Revelation, too. And we have to remember that when the church was born, it came out of Judaism. And there is a structure. There's a liturgy in the synagogue services. There's a structure. There's a there are prayers. There's a procedure that's followed. There's somebody who presides. And they also were familiar with the temple. So the idea that there was no structure and you just winged it, or, you know, there were no memorized prayers and there was nobody really in charge, I think that that's really an incorrect assessment of what the early church was like. And it's borne out by the epistles of Paul, especially in 1 Corinthians, I would say.
Well, I mean, I think we would agree that, you know, when people get sort of over egalitarian and they turn it into a Quaker meeting or a Shaker meeting or whatever it is, that's kind of, you know, it gets a little ridiculous. I mean, in every church, in Assemblies of God or Baptist or wherever you go, there's a structure, there's an order. The only question, of course, is in the details. And I think that I want to talk to you about the central idea of your book, which is it the word phronima?
Yes, phronima. Then so hipe o patersu katse phronima.
Katse phronima. Mi phonazete. No, it's so beautiful because as soon as I heard that word, I thought of that, the famous Greek, you know, rebuke. Katse phronima means, it just means like, hey, shape up, but it means literally sit kind of in the right way. Phronima, how do you say it's like prudently or wisely or?
I would say mindfully. Remember who you are and where you are. Behave yourself. It's a way of saying behave yourself. But I would say like katse phronima literally means sit mindfully. In other words, not like in a Buddhist sense, but in terms of knowing where you are and behave yourself.
It's a great term. So the Greeks say that, but the word phronima, obviously I never thought of it until literally yesterday when I was watching something you'd done online. And it was really with a priest. I can't remember who it was, the priest that you were talking to.
Maybe Chris Metropolis, about the book. Chris Metropolis, maybe, if it was about the book.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But in any event, you discuss this idea of phronima and how it's at the center of what it means to be a Christian. I mean, we keep talking about Orthodox. But I mean, it's either Christian or it's nothing. This is Christian. Yeah. And we need to part of the reason I want to have you on the program is because I think different denominations can learn from each other. And the idea that anybody has all the truth, you want to say, hey, whoever has truth from Jesus, I want it. That's the only truth. And so when we come back, we're going to explore this idea. We've got plenty of time. Thank the Lord. We'll be right back, folks. The book is Thinking Orthodox. Hey there, folks. Welcome back. We're talking to the author of Thinking Orthodox, Understanding and Acquiring the Orthodox Christian Mind, Jeannie Constantinou. Jeannie, you talk about phronima in the book. The way I see it, this is a criticism of every denomination. We act in this secular world, in the United States in particular, like being a Christian is some mental assent to some ideas. It's a thing I do once a week or something, and then I live my life. But I'm supposed to be all in 24/7. I'm supposed to have my mind renewed. It's supposed to be a completely different order of life. That, to me, is what phronima gets to. So talk about it.
That's right, because the word phronima, Greek, this is an ancient Greek word, but it's also in the New Testament in many places. St. Paul used it even, you know, in Jesus instructing Peter, told him he didn't have the right mindset. So phronima means mindset, mentality, attitude, worldview. There's no one word that encapsulates it. But definitely when the apostles went out to preach and they established communities, they didn't say, here's a book to read, here's some pamphlets, they just know the Bible. they taught not only about who Jesus was and the basics of the faith, but they also taught them a whole way of life. And the apostles received that from the Lord. They were with the Lord for 3 years, watching him, seeing how he behaved, and he taught them many things. So this is what they taught these communities when they established the churches. So being a Christian isn't just about intellectually assenting to certain concepts, but actually an entire way of life. And this was what was received by the first Christians. That's why they stood out in the culture. And that's what we need to do as Christians, because our culture is rapidly becoming more and more like first century Rome. So the Christians received an entire worldview, a way of life, an attitude, a stance, not just intellectual concepts. And this is definitely more part of the Western Christian tradition because of the developments that I spoke about earlier in Western Europe, in which theology is a matter of mental constructs. So that's never been part of the Orthodox tradition.
Well, this, of course, comes out of the Enlightenment. And you're right. It's constantly reacting to something. And I've just seen this in spades where, you know, you come up with a good idea. You say, we're not doing this enough. And then you do it so much to the exclusion of everything else. But what you just said, I come at it to exactly the same place, but it's sort of from a different route. I mean, I think that because I had the privilege of writing about some heroes of the faith, whether Dietrich Bonhoeffer or a number of people, you start realizing that to be a Christian means to reorder your whole life. It's not some mental assent. So if somebody says, what do you believe? You say, well, go to the website of my church. You'll see a statement of faith. Who cares? The statement of faith on the website of your church is not fooling the devil. It's not fooling God. It's not fooling your friends or enemies. How do you live? That is how people can know what you actually believe, what you don't merely assent to, but then don't live it out. Because if you don't live it out, clearly you don't really believe it. So it's this sort of, as you were saying, kind of a very hyper-rationalistic view of belief, whereas belief has more to do with trust, who I am versus what I claim to believe intellectually.
That's right, because if you look at how the early Christians lived, this is what I'm always going back to, the early church, because as an Orthodox Christians, we believe we're the continuation of the ancient apostolic church. And so when we look at how they lived, they didn't win people over by giving them clever arguments about Jesus, because there's nothing logical about the cross. There's nothing logical about worshiping a crucified God. Christians were considered insane by the Romans. So how did they win over? How did this little tiny religion become the official religion of the Roman Empire? Well, they did it because of the way they lived. And this is what we're lacking as Christians.
This is a great place to just pause. We're going to keep you for the next hour, folks. Plenty more ahead. This is just preamble. We'll be right back with the author of Thinking Orthodox.